Attention musicians of all levels. It's not always easy picking out a song by ear. Sometimes you need a little help. Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs. They're all available at your fingertips. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. You can find out any song you want. It also has like transpose button. It has auto scroll that you can change the speed to so you can play along with the song. A lot of the songs have the lyrics there so you can sing along with them. Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone today and start playing. Start playing any song you want. Ultimate Guitar, that's the place for you. Let's get down. Attention Austin musicians and music industry professionals. Are you having a difficult time navigating these tricky waters? Well, the Austin Music Foundation is here to help you. The Austin Music Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to strengthening and connecting the local music community with innovative programs that empower musicians, music industry professionals, and music businesses within Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to help the Austin music industry succeed. Now look, ever since COVID took over last year, everything's moved online. The consultations are online. They're at no cost to the artist or to the music industry professional. Just go to austinmusicfoundation.org. That's austinmusicfoundation.org to find out how they can help you. Austin Music Foundation is here to help. Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys are doing okay after this crazy, crazy winter storm 2023 blew through. I'm actually doing this on the Wednesday of it. Things are going okay. It seems like the it's going to get above freezing today and just kind of stay like that for the next couple of days. So things will melt. There are a couple of downed power lines, or a couple of downed branches. And there's a lot of people without power in Austin, but fortunately we've been able to keep our power on. Hopefully you have too. You've been able to stay warm. I haven't done much. I'm doing this on Wednesday because I realized, like, shit, there's a lot of emails I need to catch up on. Because when Tuesday came around, they're like, oh, everything's shutting down. Don't leave your house. Don't do anything. Well, I went to the grocery store in the morning. It seemed safe. And I came back home. And I've just been in hunker down mode. Locked in lockdown mode with my dog, who is not really a fan of this weather. I did take Tuesday off. I just took Tuesday like it's just like a day. I watched some TV shows. I watched Poker Face, a couple episodes of that, until I realized it was just like Heart to Heart, that show from the 80s. And I was like, I'm not watching any more of this. So I watched two episodes, read the description of the third episode, and I was out. Watched some other stuff. A Julia Child show that's on HBO. It's really good. That one was really, really good. Starring a lady that literally is the most perfect, like I've never seen better casting. Actually, she was born for that role, I believe. Part of me thinks she even talks like Julia Child. She looks like Julia Child. She has a Julia Child vibe. She's a big lady, like a big, strong lady, like Julia Child was. You know, do people know who that is? That might be someone that just kind of fell through the cracks. Anyway, check it out. It's cool. She was the very first cooking show person. There were no cooking shows before Julia Child. She invented the cooking show. Everything about it, like the way you shoot the camera above the stove, that wasn't even a thing before then. Or with a mirror above it. You know what I'm talking about? Amazing. Very, very cool show. Amazing. I don't know if it's amazing. But it's a good show. And I really liked it. It almost sounds like I was watching Murder, She Wrote. Yeah, I was watching that Julia Child biopic show. Oh, are you crazy? I am crazy, but I did enjoy it. Check it out. It's good. It's called Julia. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Yes, I do. Today's show is not only a great story about a great man, but also a great story about the Texas Music Office. Do you know about the Texas Music Office? The Office of the Governor's Texas Music Office is the official state-funded economic development and music business promotion office for the Texas music industry. Now, check this out. We're the only state in all of the union that has it. There's only one music office that's in a capital in all of America, and that's here in Texas. And today we'll be talking to its director. There have only been two directors, and this is the second director of the Texas Music Office, appointed by Governor Greg Abbott. His name is Brendan Anthony. He is an amazing musician and just a fantastic dude. I've been seeing him around for the last few years since he got appointed at different events and talking to him about his music-friendly communities program, which I'll talk about in just a second. But Brendan himself is a very, very, very accomplished musician. He's a classically trained violinist since he was a kid, small kid. And he started playing in bands at when he was attending A&M University during the 90s. And then he ended up playing full-time with Texas music legend Pat Green for 15 years. Three Grammy nominations. He played fiddle, mandolin, and guitar in that band. Played on a ton of his records, his live records and everything, and became very much a part of the band. Then he left the band to start a ticketing company here in Texas, and then was appointed as the director, the second director in history of the Texas Music Office by Governor Greg Abbott. Now, I have a great conversation with Brendan about the state of music in Texas, his own personal journey, and what he's been trying to do. As I said, whenever I've seen him out, he's told me about this music-friendly communities program that he started, which is connecting music markets throughout the state on an economic level. And basically, like all the different communities, and I believe he said that every major city, at least, they have 30 official music-friendly communities. That's just over the last few years. And the next one coming up is they're doing Corpus Christi. And on February 16th, they're having the first Coastal Bond Music Industry Symposium. You can go to TexasMusicOffice.com to find out all you need to know about the Texas Music Office and about Brendan Anthony himself. He's a really fascinating dude. He's a really nice dude. I was going to go down to the offices, but stuff came up. And I wasn't able to go to the Capitol and do this, but we did this over Zoom. It was great, great talking to this legendary musician and just a really, really great guy who's out there trying to do great things for Texas. I mean, look, if you live in Austin and you're involved in the music community, you kind of take for granted. There's the Sims Foundation. There's the HAM, the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians. There's the Austin Music Foundation. There's Black Fret or Sonic Guild, what it's called now, who gives out grants. They give out $250,000 to bands every year to go out and further their careers. And at the Austin Music Foundation, we're sitting there trying to find ways to help bands further their careers and doing all that stuff. But that's not in place in any other city really in the United States. It's trying to branch out. They're trying to do that. And Brendan's trying to get that going in Texas with the music-friendly communities, okay? So, and with so many other programs. He's also helping other states find out how they can have a music office in their state, Texas Music Office in their state. Everyone should have one. Anyway, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with this really fascinating and really great dude, Brendan Anthony. Let's get down.
Yeah, me and Billy the Kid ain't never got along. I didn't like the way he cocked his hat and was gone. We had the same girlfriend, and he never forgot it. She had a cute little chihuahua, till one day he up and shut her. We rode in a hard country down the New Mexico line. He had a silver pocket watch that he never did wind.
Are you at home?
Yeah, I'm at home this morning. I've got meetings starting at the office, and this is it. Yeah, this just gave me some time this morning to stick around and do some emails without the office buzz.
Oh, good. Good. So it worked out. I have spent the last couple of days listening to a lot of Pat Green music, and you are such a great musician.
Oh, yeah.
You're playing primarily fiddle on those albums?
Yeah, I kind of grew up and started playing some more stuff, but all the first several records and a whole bunch of others with Lloyd were all fiddle and some mandolin.
Yeah, you know which record I found really exciting was the Live at Billy Bob's record, and I know that's kind of early, but you can hear a band like excited to be like on fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what's funny about that record. I think probably what lent itself to the excitement was we didn't know we were doing a record. We were just playing a show at Billy Bob's, and they were starting that series that's been going on for years now. And we were the very first test case, and we were going to cut maybe one song.
Right.
And so the idea was we're going to play the show and go mutually pick out the song we all liked. And it turns out they just kept the whole thing. So there's like, there are no fixes on it.
No, that's, you can
fast, for sure. And a bunch of.
Yeah. So I really, in listening to all those things, I imagine that all of those parts that you played on those records, you came up with yourself. Those were things that, like, I don't know exactly how you guys made those records. If you had been playing those songs on the road and then went in and recorded them, or if you just guys just showed up and Pat showed you songs and you played them. What was the process on that a lot?
Yeah, definitely a mix of both. Pat had some songs fully fleshed. He had, they were just ideas. But in the early records, that was December 4th of 98. I think we cut that record. We'd already done a couple. And most of the credit for my parts, I played them. I came up with the ideas maybe, but the shaping of them and definitely the tuning of them and the phrasing was Lloyd Maines. And Lloyd was my kind of mentor and coach for several years. And would he would take the time more than some other producers might do to work with young guys like me. I was, 19 or, 21 when I was doing those, that range. And Lloyd would take time to make sure that he got good stuff, So he was really, really helpful in helping me build leads for sure.
That's amazing. So you met him in the studio as the producer? And that's, yeah. Well, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I really did. And it was kind of intimidating, but the thing that made it easier was that I didn't know how intimidative I actually should have been. And he definitely does not come across as intimidating.
No, he's such a sweet guy.
You know what I mean? It's just, what you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
But God, I mean, what he's got in his head and in his hands is like incredible.
Incredible. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about that music stuff. We'll get back to it a little bit later, but to just sort of like contextualize your place in music before your place in the Texas Music Office. Like, you really are a cat. Like, you were a guy in a band for many years, slugging it out in the studio on the road, honky tonks, the whole thing. And if it's one thing that you really understand, it seems like, is Texas music.
Yeah, I do at this point. Just to kind of put a timeline on it, I was playing classical violin from when I was about really four, and end of 3 years old into 4 years old, starting with Suzuki violin stuff and classical through high school. Started playing some kind of country cover stuff with buddies in high school. And then when I was a senior in high school and threw that over into my freshman year of college at Texas A&M, I met a guy named Corey Morrow, who's a singer-songwriter from around here.
Yeah.
And the folks in the bars let our country cover band play, would sneak me into the bars to see other people play because I wasn't old enough. And I met Corey, and then I met through Jack Ingram, I met a guy named Roger Krieger, who became a singer-songwriter in his own right and performer. And then through that kind of scene and the Robert Earl connection, I met Pat. And I met Pat sort of, it would have been probably my freshman year of college. And after a couple sit-in gigs here and there, he asked me to join his band. And I played with Pat in every... no exaggeration, and in every kind of dive and fraternity house in Texas and through the Southeast while he was building his name and reputation and crowd. So that whole path, I followed with Pat all the way through touring stadiums and selling out, arenas and actual football stadiums with Pat. So it went from the very, very, very ground up, and we played ball. And every stair step venue in most of the major cities and all the college towns across the country for, I did it for 15 years, relentlessly. and did the records and everything else. But I got to learn a lot about cities around the country. Just, you know, New York, for example, you know, starting at really tiny spots and then working up to Madison, like every venue in between. So you get to meet tons of people, and that was at every city in the country, really. It's really fun. I kind of took it for granted while it was happening because it was just a blast. But yeah, I learned kind of just about every level of how these things work, from driving yourself and trying to get back to class and try to graduate college by the skin of your teeth, still playing 100 shows a year, 75 to 100 shows a year,
Jesus,
up to touring with multi-buses and semis and all that stuff. I saw it all. It was really interesting.
What did you major in college?
Political science, oddly enough. Yep.
Interesting. Was there a path that you thought you were going to take with that?
Yeah, I interned in 92 for the Texas Land Office for Commissioner Morrow, who ended up running for governor. I was at that time pretty fascinated with leadership. I don't know if I was interested in politics or not, but I became interested in leadership. I did a big leadership summit as a kid in D.C. and became fascinated with that. So before I tripped and fell into music professionally, my goal was to graduate Texas A&M political science, take LSAT law school, and go work on campaigns and go work in that world.
Yeah.
And really just changed when I got on stage for the first time. But that really was, I thought that was my plan for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you this. At the end of those 15 years that you played with Pat Green, and then you went on to the One Live Media, which we can talk about later. But what at those 15 years, like what was it?
Yeah.
What was it that you were like, okay, I got to do something else? Was it life?
Yeah, it's not a super complex answer. In fact, it's got a really happy ending for me that even extends to today. The band went through this epic for us kind of rise that hit a peak. And we got, Pat got moved into a really commercial Nashville situation. And that changed the way our business worked for everyone who was touring, like it does for so many people.
Right,
and
right.
Things got a little bit less. Yeah, things got a little bit less loose. They became a little bit more structured. Some of the fun went out of it. It became more of a job, which is fine. I love the professional side of being a touring musician as well. But I reached a point, and Pat, if he were sitting here right now, would probably agree that it just was the end of personal growth. I mean, hands down.
Yeah, yeah.
And he recognized it. He recognized it. I recognized it. We went to dinner or lunch in New Orleans. We had a couple days in between shows for a show there. And I'd already kind of made some connects on this company you mentioned. And I said, look, whatever happens with that, you know, I think it's time before, you know, we have, you know, personal resentments happen because we're not growing together, that I go, you know, and that it just seems like the right time. It's been 15 years. It was 2010 at that point. And he said, yeah, you've been looking to do this for a long time. I could tell, you know?
Yeah.
And what was really gracious of him and what he lived up to was he said, look, you built your role here. I'm proud that you're moving on. I think that's great. And if you ever want to come back and play, even if it's just a show here or there, that space is yours. So you can come back whenever you want. And I played with them in Oklahoma City on Thursday.
Oh, awesome.
I tend to do about 10 or 15 shows a year. I'll be playing in New York and Boston and DC with them in a few weeks, like in the Ryman coming up in Nashville. And I can still make that work. So like I said, there was a happy ending to the leaving. Because the leaving was done the right way and for the right reasons. And he and I are still, real kind of family as much as you can be, you know?
Yeah. So all of this stuff informs you and really qualifies you for this job for the Texas Music Office.
Like, I think so. I think I could probably fall into the trap of thinking that because I've done it the way I did it, that I know how it all worked. And that is,
well, no, not that you know
how further from the truth, but
how it all works. But you've been in the middle of it all, you know, been in the trenches.
Yeah. What I tend to tell people when they say that, you know, when I hear that quite a bit, and I'm so flattered by it that, you know, gosh, they couldn't have found someone to do it. You know, your experience is perfect. What I tend to say is, look, I tend to look at things we do at the office through the lens of someone who I used to be. And when I go to advocate, which is not a word I can use at the office professionally, but it's what I feel we do for the industry, for people who write songs for a living, for people who tour for a living, for people who support those people, both on the admin side and the labor side, I know who those people are. You know, I lived and worked amongst them, still do, and have since I was a late teen, based out of this place where I still work. And so, while it's an honor to do the job, I feel like I've grown up in it.
Yeah.
I've seen the mistakes people make. I've seen the success people have. And I know contextually what it means to be a Texan musician.
Yeah, you
musician,
really do.
And I know what we can do to support them in my opinion. So yeah, that's, I've got to qualify it some, but yeah, I've grown up in it and I do think I understand it.
So, before we get into the whole, how the Texas Music Office works, how did you get appointed to that position? Like what, mm-hmm. where were you at to get appointed to that position?
So I never moved from Austin. During all that touring time, I moved to Austin right after I graduated from A&M in 99, and even a little bit before that, because I was already doing recordings and touring based out of here. And when we were off the road, I played every other night of the week too, whether it was sitting in with Reckless Kelly at Lucy's or playing with folks at Momo's on Sundays or at these series that were happening at Mango's and sitting in a Continental with Freddie Kirch or whoever. Like I was just always playing. And
yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know how many people come out to age and they kind of see, they start seeing you around more often. And because we live in a city where the state capital is located, you know, a lot of those people are working in jobs that either support, you know, that machine up there, or they're thinking about running for stuff themselves or whatever the case may be.
Correct.
I was really young when that was happening, and so were all these people who were my peers. And just as I moved on, those people moved to more and more important positions. And several of my friends, you know, they worked across party lines. Several of them ended up working in the Attorney General's office. And of course, that person, Attorney General Abbott, was elected governor, and they worked on campaigns, and they became key figures and advisors in that office. And after that election happened, and after that transition happened, there's so many roles to fill. And I guess they had me in the music file. And one of the guys who became a key advisor really loved music and was around a lot of the stuff that I'd done, and was like, this could be great. I didn't know we had this role, but we need to know what it is, what it's capable of doing, what its potential is, and we think you're the guy to do it. And truth be told, it was very much, are you interested in this, and when do you start? And then I got a call from the governor asking me when I started, and I took about 3 or 4 weeks to unwind from the company that you mentioned.
Yeah,
and just kind of walked in and tried to figure it out. That's really how it happened. It wasn't any more... And I mean this sincerely, it wasn't any more than that. I think I kind of checked the music box in their mind, maybe, and that's how I got the call on it.
Right. And the office was created in 1990, right? The Texas Music Office? Is that right? Or 91 or something?
Yeah, the commission that had it, yeah, the commission that got it created in 91 was formed the year prior.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of folks, we probably like Mike Tolleson and all those folks who worked on it, who've been so instrumental in the Austin scene, formed that commission and informed Governor Clements that yes, we should take a more structured approach to supporting what we all know is such an important part of Brand Texas. Let's create the Texas Music Office. Of course, the Film Commission, which is our sister agency, and we're linked in code, had been in existence for many, many years before that. And so in 1991, the office was created. Soon thereafter, and probably I would, if I had to kind of guess, given my knowledge and context now, the reason it still exists is because Ann Richards moved it into the office of the governor at that point when she came into to office.
Okay.
Which gives it all sorts of institutional protection and budget protection. So she was a huge music fan, and she moved it into the office of the governor.
Okay.
In 92, I think.
Okay. And you, you're only the second one, right? Because was Casey Monahan the only one before you?
Yeah, there have been two of us. That's correct. That's correct. Yes, he was director of the Texas Music Office from inception until 2015. That's right.
Right, right. Yeah, I was good friends with him. He's I've been good friends with him for a long time. He was always a good fellow. So your team now has Chip Adams, who was the Modern Outsiders, Outsider Records guy, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for him.
Yes, Chip Adams came over right before we kind of snuck one in under the wire. We didn't know we did, but right before COVID happened and the hiring freeze and everything that happened then happened. But we got Chip in to run a new program, that Music Friendly Communities program that I've kicked off and into 15, into 16. And so Chip came on to run that. Yeah, he's a tremendous asset.
Yeah. Well, you and I have talked about that, about the Music Friendly Communities before, like when I've seen you out. And can you talk a little bit about that and tell the people what it is that you're trying to do with this?
Yeah, so this is a more complex answer. And stop me at any time if you want me to redirect it all. So, you know, we talked about when I came into office, how I got in there, and kind of what my, if you want to call it this, what my mandate was. My mandate, as I perceived it from the governor and his team, was assess the capabilities of the office, report back to us on what you think it does today, and quickly, if you can, try to come up with some ways to grow it, expand it, increase its mission and its scope, and tell us what you think its capabilities are if you were to put those into action. So we gathered some industry leaders together with the governor, and in parallel, we created an economic impact study using our music industry database that was in existence prior to my joining the office. And we sort of put together a proposal, and the proposal was to address a need that I saw straight away. But you need data to support action. The need that I saw straight away was that as a statewide agency, which the Texas Music Office is supposed to be, it had no real institutional contacts in any other city in the state. So it was kind of in touch with what Austin does, the economic development front through that office. But I could not pick up the phone and call any one entity in any other community in the state to get some sort of what was happening in any other state. So in my estimation, that did not make it a statewide office. That made it an office within state government living, working in Austin.
Correct.
So it's just a question of perspective and definition there. And I don't mean to use anything I say as critique of the way this functioned before I got there. It's to identify a need that I found. So it took that conversation with the governor and these industry leaders to identify that our office was going to begin to address the needs of the music industry in the state from an economic and jobs perspective, as well as a cultural one, and to be clear about how we approach both sides of that coin.
Okay. So
and a big step toward doing that was to improve the,
Sorry. You broke up a little bit.
So in commissioning this first economic impact report that we created in 2015,
okay,
that signaled that we were going to begin talking about the commercial music industry in Texas as an economic driver and a jobs creator. And that meant that we were going to have two different conversations. One is a cultural, one is Texas is part of brand. Music is brand Texas culturally, yes. And one as an economic sector and driver that would get the same sort of attention that any other economic vertical would get. They're two different conversations. So we needed to improve our data and we needed to improve our connections around the state. And so that began our sort of build towards what became the Music Friendly Communities Program. I called it the Music Friendly Communities Program because people around the state were all already familiar with the Film Friendly Program that has well over 150 members at this point. So it would be a little bit more easily understood by the people who had to make these decisions to start them. Now that's where the similarity ends between the two programs as these communities found out. So what I began doing is taking this structure and this framework out to city leaders around the state. So I got in the car and would spend several days a week in cities across the state trying to fight on creating our first Music Friendly Communities office. In my mind, these offices, of which there are 39 now, become satellite offices to us. They do the same job we do on a state level at their local level. And Fort Worth was our first to really understand the framework, take it on, and sort of create the sort of reporting relationships that we need. And then Austin, which had all pieces together, became second, and San Antonio. And then we've, like I said, reached on to 39 now.
Wow.
This was all in an effort to be able to, at the very beginning, to pick up the phone and call this community liaison and say, what's happening there?
Right.
What are you doing for the music industry community locally? Who are they? What's happening there? And now we're the only state in the country that has a program like ours. And it's certainly the most far-flung program of its kind anywhere in the world. And that's something we're really proud of. Really what it lets us do is serve as that statewide agency and provide a framework for communities across the state to serve their local music industry communities, whatever that scale might be. It really doesn't necessarily matter to us if they're talking about 2,000 or 2,000, they can make decisions to benefit how those small businesses locally work because for the first time they have the knowledge and the input to do so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really proud about the program. There's a ton available online about it. And Chip, your friend, is out there aggressively every day working with these communities.
Yeah. I'll put the link to the website and all this stuff on here. It's gov.texas.gov/music.
Cool.
For those of you that know.
Or you can just go Texas Music Office.com.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
It's a little less clunky.
Yeah, it is. I'll put that on there. And the event that you're having, the first Coastal Bend Music Industry Symposium on February 16th in Corpus Christi. Now, is that to get Corpus Christi into the program as well?
Well, I never miss an opportunity to work with these communities to become certified. So we're part of our, when they came to ask us for help about building the symposium, our friend Casey Lane down there, who's a long friend of mine in the business, when he asked for help, you know, we say, you know, how can we help? Of course. But one thing we always ask is, look, if your community is not certified yet, we're going to come do this workshop there too. And that can count as your first step to becoming Music Friendly Communities. And frankly, Corpus should be one of our offices at this point. So
totally.
We're going to try to accomplish two things at the same time and including trying our best to accomplish their goals of clearing up some real misunderstandings about how PROs work with music venues everywhere, not just
Correct.
Corpus.
Yeah, yeah. You work a lot with Mitch Ballard from BMI. He has an office here, and I've seen you two at places.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I'll tell you why. And that's because, early in my days at the office, identifying the problem that everyone I know, you know, including a bunch of your friends too, I'm sure, you know, you look around and there are no big representation. There's no big representation of industry in Austin. We have tons of great music professionals, but there's no, you know, billboard signs of, you know, the way there are in Nashville and other places.
Correct.
And so I started going to Nashville very, very early on in my office time, and meeting with PROs and other type of groups. And I had a meeting with BMI then, with then Vice President of Creative Jody Williams. And in my very first meeting, I said, very soon you will have a permanent office in Texas, probably based in Austin, where you've been doing work since the '90s. And, Jody, to his credit, you know, at that point said, well, we don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, we're thrilled to work with you and we'll keep the lanes open. But just a few short years later, permanent office, Mitch Ballard runs it. They have staff and they're out working in the community, and really creating, networking opportunities. And he's met with over 400 people since he's been here, has created publishing deals, has created networking opportunities, like I mentioned. But that was because we sort of drew a line in the sand and said, we need permanent PRO presence. We don't really care which one it is.
Right.
We're glad it's BMI. They're wonderful partners. But I made that offer to CSAC and NSCAP as well, and even talked to GMR about it.
Wow. For those of you listening, when a PRO is a performance right organization like BMI, ASCAP, CSAC, like Brendan said, and they collect your performance royalties.
They serve a really important.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And
it's a really important role in the ecosystem. And
sorry, go ahead. You cut out.
Oh no, I was just saying how important their role in the ecosystem is.
Yeah. Oh, totally. So when, as far as like your economic impact report, now you're able to report from those 39 cities as well and sort of get an idea, a bigger picture of the state now of where, what music's bringing into this state financially?
Yeah, we do that. Yeah, exactly. We do that anecdotally by getting from them monthly about what changes are happening to local three systems. And we ask them to create databases that mirror ours and help overwrite ours.
Okay.
So our data gets better the more reporting that they do.
Right.
So really, we try to absorb data from them, overwrite what's in our 16,000 listing strong Texas music industry database with accurate data that they've collected locally.
Right.
It's a much better system. It's much more evolved, much more digital and searchable.
Right.
It's all available online to anyone who likes it. Look. That's where we use our economic sampling model to generate those numbers.
Yeah. Another thing that you guys offer, and I remember in the '90s, it was a big book, but now it's online, the Music Industry Directory and Resources, which has always been a great help to people. I've actually used that since it started coming out and I had one in my house.
Yeah. You know, people all over the place would get that book, and that was a really great resource. We just moved into a digital age.
Oh yeah,
it was no longer necessary to create. The minute you put it out, it's become obsolete. That's just how search engines work now, and that's fine. That's just passage of time stuff.
Right, right. You also, I'm just kind of going through the main bullet points that you guys have on your website, like the Music Education and Community Grant Program. Can you explain that a little bit for the people? Mm-hmm.
If you've seen those, it's the brand similar to the one on my cap here. If it's the music Texas Music License Plate, if you buy one of those, a large percentage that the DMV doesn't take goes towards a fund that's separate from our office, but we allocate to nonprofits and to groups that are supporting music in underserved communities. It's a fantastic program. I wish we had a lot more money for it. We tried to open it up for direct giving, but we're not allowed to do that. So we're relying on the sales of that license plate. So we don't have a ton of money, but we've given a lot away. The recent rebrand a few years ago, it's been several years now, they got a lot of Texas local music celebrities uh-huh. to support it, created a big spike. And so we had some more money for a while, but it's a cool program. I wish we could do a lot more with it.
Yeah, well, people can get, I mean, if you're listening to this now, one way you can help is to get a license plate. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an easy click through.
Yeah. And what about the music business development program? There's there are resources for people starting businesses and ones that have them. And I'm sure you probably got a lot of inquiries during the COVID time.
Yeah, that is really broad. So potentially what we can do with companies, if they reach a certain job threshold, which means they're going to create over X amount of jobs, there are tools that we tap in the economic development tourism umbrella, of which we're a team member, to relocate companies, to expand companies. The issue is at the state level, those job thresholds are so high that most of the businesses in our world just don't qualify for them. But there are local incentives that we send people to. So we have a lot of institutional knowledge about these groups around the state that support small business development, SBDCs. These things are everywhere. And we have regional teams all over the state who have access to these resources as well. So we put people with available resources so that they can apply and find out more information, even if it doesn't resources for them as well.
Right. Right. There's also, you wrote a year in review letter that just came out. Talking about what you guys have been able to accomplish for the last year. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's always just a good sum up. Just for anyone who's curious, at the end of every year, I compile sort of a month by month accounting of what the TMO's done. And they all rest in binders in the office in case anyone comes in and says, what have you done while you're here?
Correct.
They can come look and go through those. They're also available online. That letter we come out with at the beginning of every year is to address the work we've done, our conference speaking engagements, our work on any number of projects that we are involved with that we think people might find interesting. At the beginning of each legislative session, which is every 2 years, we create that new economic impact report. So information about that's included in there and what we think about it. So it's just a yearly sum up. It's a way for us to kind of generally and broadly account for our time. We spend a tremendous amount of time traveling to visit with people, meeting people face to face, and we try to account for some of that in that letter. We talk, of course, about the work in the Music Friendly Communities program and how we are attempting all the time due to scale now, which is really interesting to us. We've reached a point there where we don't necessarily have to go out and market the program. It's done its share of marketing on its own at this point. We have every city over 1 million involved and every major community in the state involved now, except for Corpus. And so we have a tremendous amount of growth that has to happen there in our office to keep up with that growth.
Yeah.
We create an annual conference where we bring all of those cities together to let them talk to themselves. And we gave a report on that. So it's just kind of a bucket to show what we've been up to in the last year and some stuff we're looking forward to in the months ahead.
Yeah. I'm really impressed with all of the work that you've done. I feel like Texas is such an exemplary state. Austin, because of its focus on itself for so long, has really become an exemplary music city and all that stuff. Like, I'm very proud to be a part of all of this stuff and be, you know, see that the place where I live takes care of its own and looks out for people. You know what I mean? And I don't mean like financially, like handing things out. I mean like providing resources for people to get out there and get more work for themselves.
Yeah, that's a really important distinction. And I don't think we should miss an opportunity to say that. Yeah. Very generally, and then to get more specific, because I think what you just said is very important, because of the work that we've done at Texas Music Office across the state, we are now in a position to go serve as kind of consultants to other states and cities around the country who are interested in doing what we've done in Texas. I spoke to the Georgia legislature this year. We've worked with Oklahoma, Arkansas, Now North Carolina starting their own version of this program.
That's
great.
We're
thrilled with that. And we sit on panels in the, around the country and talk about that. We're thrilled about it. But our focus is on what happens in Texas and how laws change in DC that might affect us here and how laws change in state house that might affect us here. Whenever I go talk to people in places like that, when I speak at conferences, when I speak to groups that are making involved in decision-making processes, whether they're elected or they're consulting, Austin is top of their list, always, without exception, and for really good reason.
Yeah.
And that's because Austin has gone about this work of supporting on so many levels the people in the music industry that the city really has deemed for a long time as important members of society. So that's a really big thing to say.
Correct.
And it's a testament to the work that Austin has done that the first part of every conversation I have is, how did Austin do this? Well, that's complicated. There's a tremendous amount of nonprofit support for the music industry in Austin.
Yeah.
Hands down. I wish there were more versions of this in just about every other part of the state. Between the really major ways we support people in mental health, healthcare, continuing education,
yeah,
there are hundreds of others that do really niche things for people in Austin.
Yeah.
There is a City Economic Development Corporation office that is going about the work of representing the community at City Hall.
Yeah.
The fact that mayors past and present have taken at least time to mention the music industry in almost every public address they give, whether people genuinely feel the effects or not, they should look at that as a win for their industry sector.
100%.
It is a win.
Yeah.
So many of these major cities that we intersect with don't even have the language to accomplish them.
Correct.
So the fact that Austin's able to do that and even engage in the kind of really sticky, tough debates that they have about who gets funding, why do they get funding, why is it important they get funding, is a testament to the fact that that dialogue exists and is able to exist through the Austin Music Commission, the Austin Music Economic Development Office, and other groups who are actively involved.
Yeah.
So the more frustrated we get with these conversations and the more worried we get about what it actually means to be a music industry professional, I would take a minute, and I always counsel people who live in Austin, I would take a moment and find some gratitude that you live in a place or you still choose to live in a place, even given the economic hardships that go along with it, that allows that kind of debate to happen.
Yeah.
I'll say for the record, we talked about my past and where I came from. I didn't know as a musician coming up and no, I am an Austin musician and I have been since 99 that I was maybe even in a position to get money from a city. That would never have crossed my mind.
Right.
We sold stuff. This is when you could sell things and make money. I get that.
Yeah.
But we sold stuff and we sold concert tickets and we were a popular band. And that made me a viable music industry professional in a way, because when we went to go play, we got paid to do it.
Correct.
I know to some that seems like a novel or even unattainable concept, but it was the way I was kind of brought up. We all have to adjust to a new paradigm. And it feels like we have to do it almost daily. And I get that. It is tough.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're even having these debates and conversations about who can and should receive this or that or the other means we live in a fairly evolved music society here.
We really do.
And for all its warts and all its frustrations, it is the case. So I just don't want to miss that opportunity.
Yeah. You know, in working with the Austin Music Foundation, I sometimes come across people that are frustrated. And I do also just say, like, the things that you're frustrated with, like, if you live, nothing against Houston. I love Houston. I'm going there tomorrow. But I don't try and find Ham Sims or Austin Music Foundation there. They're not, like Sonic Guild, the Black Fret, you know what I mean? Like, Who's giving away $250,000 a year to like artists to go do stuff with it?
So incredible point and really well summed up. And Houston's a great example and I'll lean into it. So Houston is a recent music friendly community partner for us.
Okay.
It took a long time to get that process done, just given the scope and scale of that city in itself, right? Yeah. Massive, diverse place, far flung, represented by a lot of people. We finally got that certification done. I'm always very careful when I go to speak to those groups, even when I congratulate them about being certified. And I say, I want you to understand and to manage your expectations at this point, that what I'm standing up here recognizing is that your journey is absolutely at the starting line.
Yeah.
You're just beginning this. You're just beginning this effort. That could amount to things that places like Austin have accomplished many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And I can't come in waving the Austin flag or they'll dismiss a good idea.
Right.
But I always say, until you're, you know, I don't want them to dismiss it out of hand because they feel like they're being Austin bullied.
Right.
But until your city boasts its own versions of the Austin Music Foundation, you've still got work to do.
Yeah.
You know, this effort and this framework you're adopting that helps you create your own Houston Music Commission and your Houston Music Office.
Yeah.
And until you've fully rounded it out, you're not a fully evolved music society as we know it in Austin.
Right.
And if that's what your aspiration is, you got a hell of a lot of work to do.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's also Austin also was a lot of the focus was music way before it was, before any of those things were invented in the 90s. You know, basically all of these things were kind of like invented
right.
in the 90s and early 2000s.
Right.
Right down to your
office. The idea that you would in the number. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. What other state, what other city would have created an office like ours? And the answer is nobody did.
No.
That's why we're the only one that exists and functions that we do.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a testament to forward thinking and a prioritization of an industry that I've held dear forever, but very few other places do. It's sort of the attitude that what a fun thing you get to do. Good luck. And that's fine. But these are real people's lives we're talking about and real people's small businesses we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're looking forward to this year in 2023? Anything big coming up?
Yeah, I'm really excited about a program we're piloting right now. We're beginning to pilot right now. It was our goal in Q1. To pilot a chapter program for all of our offices that can be led by regional directors.
Uh-huh.
And we're creating that pilot now. This will greatly reduce our travel load.
Yeah.
And will greatly streamline our information flow. And so as we've reached this point of scale, we have to adapt to it and scale up to it. And a chapter and a chapter program is going to do that for us. I have every confidence, just like everything else we've done on that front, that it'll succeed. It'll succeed because we picked the right people to help us start it. So at home, we're going to do that. We're going to build out a chapter program that'll report to us and hopefully give us a more streamlined data collection and reporting process. I know that sounds really bureaucratic or whatever else, but it allows a small, tiny 4-person agency to be many more places at once. And it creates a hierarchy that's going to better serve the entire program. So I'm psyched about that.
That's great.
I'm also excited that it's what it ought to be. It's going to grow on its own, but we need to help it manage growth. And we can't be managed by that growth. We can be chasing our tails all over the state and we just can't afford it. We don't have enough people to do it. I'm not asking for any of that. We can ask our people who are already involved in the program to help us. And that's what they've graciously volunteered to do.
That's great.
Externally, we're going to continue to be thought leaders, and we're going to continue to share the successes and the setbacks we've seen in Texas to help educate other places about how to do this. And we're going to give them, you know, the full framework, but we're going to continue to lead conversations about why our efforts are important and why other places should be invested in efforts like that. I think that as often as we can bring in new partners to help here. I think that the conversation to support creators of intellectual property, to protect their work, to protect their small business, I think that helps the country. I think that helps us too.
Yeah.
So the more partners we have talking about that in DC, and not just us, the better. So we're going to continue to educate other places about why they should be invested in this too. So we want to be thought leaders externally. We want to help create a more managed program here that can grow on its own and be more sustainable.
Yeah.
I'm invested, and I said this early on in this process, I'm personally invested in creating systems that will outlast people. Yeah. I want systems that work for people and that don't need personalities to drive them.
Yeah.
And that's really what we want to create here. We want our office to be sustainable, and we really want to be accountable, and we want it to make sense to everybody. And we want to be an invaluable resource for, and to do that, you have to create those systems that support people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys over there, you, Chip, Steven, and Jenny, guys are doing a great job. And thank you. Is there anything you want to throw in before we go? Thank you so much for taking the time to do this too, Brendan. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I have these kind of conversations with people. I love your podcast. I'm proud that you decided to have me on. I'm really grateful.
Yeah.
I think that there are potentially things that are happening right now in the legislature that affect small business in our space. We did a lot of work after the Astroworld disaster to try to have a deeper conversation about what it means to bring people together to see live music in Texas. Yeah. And I hope some changes happen in the mass gathering permits that will protect people. I want to be clear that those mass gathering permits apply to things that are not considered municipalities.
Okay.
So we're not coming for how ACL happens, for example. That's
right.
Not our intent. Our intent is to make sure that everything else that happens in these rural areas, and this applies to what happened in Houston in these unincorporated parts.
Correct.
That these things are created and overseen in a way that people safe. And I want, I would love to see changes in language happen. I'm hopeful that that will happen. Another thing is that a venue incubator bill was passed in session that needs to be funded this session for that program to actually move forward. That would apply to venues that qualify across the state. And that would certainly apply to venues in Austin that meet the qualifications, and that would give them up to $100,000 in revenue back on their mixed alcohol beverage tax that they pay in annually.
Wow.
I think it's important to define music venues as a separate class of business from bars and nightlife, and they've now in statute, they've been defined as such. And now I think, given their different operational requirements, I think that they deserve and need a little bit of margin help. I think we can give that to them.
That's huge.
Other people have to do that work, though, based on our league. It is huge. And based on our legal setup at the office, I can't lobby for that. But I can point out to people that it's out there and it needs that funding mechanism set up. So if anyone's interested in that, I'd encourage them to go give that a look.
Yeah.
It's a really great program. And we would have to administer it at the office, which is a ton of new work. We're not scared of it. We want to do our jobs for those businesses, but that funding mechanism needs to be set up. So a couple of kind of administrative things could happen that would make concert going hopefully safer in the entire state, and that would give music venues, especially after our massive COVID economy, yeah, a little bit extra breathing room so, yeah, we keep more of them around for longer. Those are things that are happening, and I'm looking forward to those. I'm looking forward to getting out and spreading the word about what Texas is doing to support the music industry economy and how others can get involved. Like I said, but I just like bragging about what we do to other states too. So,
yeah. Well, I'm glad, man. I'm really glad you're out there doing it. I'm very proud to be a part of, this music scene that has that sort of infrastructure that other places don't have, you know. Very exciting.
Yeah. I think that, you know, yeah, we're definitely in terms of state represented support for the music industry economy, the gold standard. In fact, we're the only standard at this point. And so, we should be the best one we can possibly be. And God, we love living and working here in Austin, and love participating in things like this, where we can spread the word locally and to your friends around the country who are listening to this, that we're out there doing this work and we need input, and we sure do love doing it.
Well, we love you doing it, man. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time to do it. It's great to see you. I'm sure I'll be seeing you around somewhere in the next couple months with South By coming up. But I really appreciate you. And so I think the rest of the community does too. Thanks so much.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks.
Appreciate that, Johnny. Thanks so much for having me on, man.
Yeah, I'll send you guys links to this when it comes out in a couple weeks.
Anytime. See ya.
Gang, that was Brendan Anthony. Check out the Texas Music Office at texasmusicoffice.com. Get involved. Find out what you can do. Find out more about it. See what they're doing for you if you're a Texas musician. Great conversation. Always great talking to Brendan. What a fantastic dude. Get out there to texasmusicoffice.com. And don't forget, gang, when you're out there checking out the Texas Music Office, you can always subscribe to this podcast, wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. We drop a From the Vault series every once in a while on Saturday nights, where we reach back into our vault of well over 1,000 episodes, pull one out, shine it up, and re-release it for you to listen to, just in case you missed it or in case you want to hear it again. All right? Everyone, I hope you have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Thank God this crazy weather lifted. Get out there and enjoy the outdoors and the sunshine. Maybe I'll see you out there. Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down. Gave her silver, and he paid her hotel bills. With me that she loved, she said she always will. I'd go out and see her whenever Billy was gone. Yeah, me and Billy the Kid, we never got along. Never got along. Like the way he tied his shoes and his gun was all wrong. But one day I told Billy, said, man, I got this foolproof scheme. Gonna rob the Wells Fargo, it's a busting at the seams. Him that I framed him, but I don't feel that. The way that I was living is driving me mad. Billy went for his gun, but his gun was on all wrong. Yeah, me and Billy the Kid, we ain't never got along. Got along. I sure like the way he swayed in the wind while I played him his favorite song. My girlfriend sings harmony, do la cucaracha. And we sit and wind that pocket watch, and we pet a new chihuahua. Moved into the hotel, got a room with a shower. Lie and listen, let a watch tick, hour after hour. And outside the wind, there's a blowing oh so strong. And me and Billy the Kid, we ain't never got along.